Good afternoon and welcome to Real Talk. You're listening to the voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. You're also listening to voiceofvashon.org. You might be listening on your VOV app, and now you can listen on your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play KVSH. It's 12 noon on Tuesday, January 23rd. Don't I wish it was July? I'm Susan McCabe, your host for Real Talk. Real Talk is the show that seeks to answer questions, large and small. Today, the question is kind of a big one with some perhaps small answers. It is how to survive in tumultuous times, those times that we're living in. And our guest is Terry Hershey, author, humorist, inspirational speaker, dad, ordained minister, and lover of French wine, who espouses the idea of doing less and living more. Mm. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you.
And is this an appropriate subject for now?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was reading an article about, it's a 1 year anniversary of the change in politics here, but this last year's been tumultuous, obviously as a given. So they were talking about the one word to describe, and this was in, with the Women's March a few days ago, et cetera. And so one word to describe 2017. You know what the most common word was?
What?
Exhausted.
In
other words, it didn't really matter where. It's not about the issues per se. It's about the fact that people feel the weight of something. There's a bombardment. In other words, what to do with it. And so the question is, how do you find a place where it doesn't take over your spirit,
How do you find that? I know that studies have shown that Americans and other folks in the world are living with increased depression.
Yes.
Increased anxiety.
Correct.
And where is that coming from? And how do we manage that?
Well, we live in a world where multitasking is a big deal. And we think I've lived here 30 years, meaning here on Vashon 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we think we're exempt from it here because we have, it's nirvana, right?
Yeah, right.
I found that even because back in the day, I used to spend a lot of time at a Benedictine monastery, for just going on retreat. But even there, in other words, no matter where you go, you're still going to find places where life whacks you,
At a Benedictine monastery?
Even at a Benedictine monastery.
Are they listening to the news?
Well, they don't have to because all the people who come in, bring our own anxiety and stress.
I see.
So we bring it to them, it's just just life does it. Relationships, dishes break and people don't understand. So, what do you do with that? But So the first thing I tell people is we start with a paradigm about how we measure what's going on for well-being anyway.
How do we measure that?
Well, think about it. Just if we see each other on the street here, or first Friday or something, we'll say, hey, how you doing? How you doing? And usually the first thing is it has to do with what you've been doing. It has to do with doing. It's all about doing. Mm. In other words, tell me about what activities you've been doing or tell me. Or even about the show, which is great, and we can talk about, Voice of Vashon, et cetera. But the first question is about the doing part of your life.
Not about the being.
Not about the being. And it's an interesting thing that when I work like this, I work a lot with the education system and the healthcare system. Both industries where people get in full, wholehearted.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometime down the road, they're going, man, the mess of this, the heaviness of this doesn't make it fun anymore. And so we talk about how can we find places to get that back, that sense of well-being back, that refueling back. And so the paradigm shift is instead of asking you what you do, what would happen if I asked you what made you smile today?
Oh.
Did you see the moon the other night? What did you think of the sunset? I mean, we don't go there. Our paradigm settles on. And we have to appear, because God forbid if we say, I haven't been doing anything.
Right. I've been wasting my time being with me. Yes.
Because we put a moral price tag on it. Mm-hmm. If you've done nothing, then it's waste. That's interesting. Where'd that come from?
That is strange.
Yeah. In other words, we teach our children, you know, moment of silence as that's a good thing. But now, and yet the culture at large teaches them that that's a waste.
Yes, true.
And so you have to somehow tell people, you have to make stuff up. Oh, it's amazing how busy I've been.
Does that make me more important?
I don't know what the deal is. Why am I afraid? What am I afraid? Yeah, exactly. That I'll feel more important. And people, busyness is like a badge of honor, which is strange to me. And people even say to me, you know, I don't want to take any of your time. And I'm thinking, where does that come from? Because you're so busy. I don't get that. I mean, I do get it. Because I do the same thing as if that makes me somebody. So sitting with somebody and being silent, that doesn't make me somebody. Weeding my garden and listening to the birds, that doesn't make me somebody. You know.
I wonder when I hear you talk about these things, how much of it is related to the fact that we live somewhat in isolation. In other words, when we run into somebody and we say, how are you? Do we really want to know?
Well, yeah.
And is it somehow sinful to not be feeling great?
Correct.
And does all that separate us from one another? So how do we get back to the notion that truly being connected to one another is indeed valuable?
Yeah, and if being is a part of the scenario, and it's not, because if it's just about doing, then it's about comparing myself to you and one another. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm comparing myself, I'm not really interested in how you're doing, other than the fact that I want to make sure that I sound good. So if it's being is the deal, then I have to realize that I can't do this alone. I have to be connected. Because if we're all human beings, you're on the same journey I'm on. And at some point, I mean, there is the moment. Maybe we're not going to have a long conversation, but there's a nod that says, okay, I get it. And it's okay for you to say to me, right now it's not fun, you know? And,
yeah.
And we don't need to unpack that conversation per se in a brief passing, but it's just an acknowledgement that says, okay, I get it. And there's another person on the planet who gets it and cares. And I agree with you. And it's an interesting thing to ask. I mean, because in the church world, you know, I'm clergy, but in the church world, you know, you have the, every church has a coffee hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the old adage about what you're allowed to say and not say at the coffee hour.
What are you allowed to say and not say at the coffee hour?
Well, yeah. It's got to be pretty cheerful, you know.
Upbeat. Let us all be upbeat. It's like the one of my least favorite comments is, it's all good.
It's all good. Oh,
which is so dismissive.
Right.
It takes us, it immediately says, don't tell me anything I don't want to hear. Or don't tell me anything unpleasant.
Right.
You know, we build this talk as pause, renew, and live. I believe that was exactly what I took from your website.
Right.
How do we do that?
Well, the middle word is renew, but the premise is that, because when people ask me what I do for a living, going back to the do part.
Yeah, that's an interesting answer.
If I don't want to talk to people, I tell them I'm a TV evangelist.
Yeah, that would turn it off.
Yeah, then they leave me alone. But I tell people I'm in the refueling business, because we are, as human beings, we are built to be refueled, to be replenished. You know, we give out. And so where do we find places to be replenished and renewed? And I mean, we learn the same thing from a garden every year. You know, it has to have downtime right now, and it'll be replenished and renewed. And so we put manure, you know, there'll be 3 or 4 inches of manure going on in the garden in a month or so, et cetera. So where do we find places to be replenished? And to do that, you can't do it by just increasing the speed of life. You can't do it in a hurry. It requires space. Tell me where you sit to just let that happen. And that's not an easy thing to do. I was telling you before we did the show that I was just in Spain last week, and I love the comment at one of the wineries. I was with one of the owners of one of the old wineries, and she said, I said something about whatever we were going to do, and she said, "Don't worry, we're not in a hurry here." And this is what's interesting, and this is a Vashonner here talking. 30 years almost qualifies me, doesn't it? Even here we're susceptible to that.
Oh, very much so.
Aren't we?
Yes, we are.
We like to think that we're not, but we are. And so slow down. Pause is an interesting thing. I mean, just take a breath. Before I speak, take a breath before I spout off. Take a breath before I make a decision. Just the pause is a powerful thing. And so it's an invitation to do that. And what's interesting, going back to your comment about being together, is whenever I do workshops with people, we do feedback with each other about what's happening when we're pausing, because sometimes even in a pause, it's like, well, am I pausing correctly? Or
yes.
Like I'm worried about it or something. So it's the slowing down. And because what happens when you slow down is you make a space and you're not multitasking. And the other thing is then you can notice, you can pay attention.
You can pay attention to what might be coming up.
Yeah.
That you've been avoiding.
Yeah, you can do
that. Do we fear the pause?
Well, I think we do, because we're not necessarily sure about that we like everything that's going on in our life. And so we're afraid of stuff that might be confusing or negative. And we put a price tag on that, too, that's somehow bad or detrimental. And so that's unfortunate, just like we do whenever we're going through grief or anything like that. Sometimes we try to outrun it rather than just live in it. Thoreau, I did a quote from him last week in my blog that, doesn't really matter how mean your life is. Live it. Embrace it. I mean, jump in. I mean, be wholehearted about it.
That kind of goes along with the idea of being present, does it not?
Exactly. Mindfulness, present.
Right.
What do you see here? What do you see now? That's the pause part. Because the renewal is, if I'm seeing, in other words, if I'm present, that means I'm engaged. If I'm engaged, I'm wholehearted. So that's the renewal. I'm my wholehearted. It feeds and fuels what's there.
So if I'm pausing to be in the moment, how does that help to combat the stress and the anxiety that this moment in our human lives is creating?
Well, if stress and anxiety is what's ruling the day, that means quite literally my mind is not with me. My mind is either in the past or the future. My mind isn't here. And if my mind isn't here, I literally am not able to respond or say. I mean, even if I need to say to you, this completely sucks, okay, fine, this completely sucks. Well, let yourself do that then. Be present in the suckiness of it all. The thing about the needing to have my mind here or there with anxiety and stress is that it's as if I need to somehow fix it or get rid of it. So I'm always running around the corner to fix it or get rid of it, rather than just embracing this life. In other words, it doesn't, When you're present, and you know, and I'm focusing on my bottle of water or my sip or the way the rain is outside today, you know, and if I just settle into some of the things that are happening, or even, you know, the discomfort I'm feeling about the grayness of the sky, if I just let that be for a minute, then I realize all of the stuff about anxiety and stress, it's not as big as I thought. In other words, I get to say how the story ends. It doesn't own me. That doesn't mean my life is, quote, better. I mean, it's still gray. It's still not fun. But by God, it's my life.
I'm here.
I'm here.
And the alternative is not so great.
The alternative isn't very good. Yeah. I was going to say something mean like the alternative is Bellevue, but that's about That wouldn't be polite, would it?
No, it wouldn't. You're listening to Real Talk if you just tuned in. Thank you for joining us for lunch. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and I'm here with Terry Hershey, who is an author, humorist, inspirational speaker, dad, ordained minister, and lover of French wine, and espouser of the notion of doing less and living more. We are able to do this thanks to Windermere Vachon Real Estate. They support all our community information programming and our emergency alert service. They make all this possible here on The Voice of Vachon. Terry, you mentioned you just returned from Spain.
I did.
And it made me wonder if this culture of busyness as a badge of honor is peculiar to the United States, to our culture.
Not specifically to our culture. I mean, some of the Asian cultures have it,
true,
you know, and, it's ratcheted up there, the pace of life and the burnout.
Yeah, China may have us beat.
China and Japan both. Yeah. There are many European cultures who aren't predicated on this notion. In other words, there are ingredients of life that have a greater sense of meaning, you know. I mean, even like the time you take to prepare a meal and eat a meal in some places there, it's vastly different than our culture, which, and I don't remember the exact percentage, but it's high of the number of meals in our culture that are consumed in the automobile.
Ooh, or next to the computer?
Correct. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's just something about, so the verb I like there is savoring. You know, it's the same when in asking a question, not just what you do, but, you know, what did you see, hear, taste, touch, smell? But tell me what you savored. And the thing about, because, and that's where I have, that's, so I give people a checklist. That's how you can tell if you're pausing. So if I'm preparing a meal or dining with a friend or someone, something, tell me, I have to just give myself a time out and tell me what I'm savoring here. Because if I'm savoring, then I'm engaged, then I'm present. It's the same when I weed my garden. You know, I can think of this as a tedious, unpleasant act. But the irony is that I love it.
I do too.
I just love it.
I thought I was strange, but
yeah, no, and I just like the dirt and the fingernails and the. And, you know, and there's probably the anal or tenny part. I like the little clean spaces that I fix.
Yes, right.
But there's something about it's semi-mindless, but it's mindful because you notice little things. You notice little things in the garden you didn't notice before. And you just pay attention to stuff. And when you pay attention, you're here. Now, if I'm here, this is the big deal when I go back to the healthcare and to teachers things. If I'm here, then I'm present for the people around me.
And so all the administrative red tape and the things that get on people's nerves can go away while they're focusing on being in the now with whatever ministrations they happen to be engaged in.
Yeah. It's interesting in the healthcare industry, one of the things that's really unfortunate is that they've shifted over from paperwork to, you know, digital.
Computer.
Yeah. And so because of that, they found that there's less eye contact.
Really?
With the patients. And it's detrimental, not just to the patient, but the healthcare givers too. They don't like that because they have to spend so much time doing this now with that little, which is an interesting thing, dynamic. And so eye contact is really, we're finding it in school system too, because the children, you know, my son's 20, so he was raised in a school system that's everything. They don't write anything anymore.
It's all on computers.
It's all computer.
And some schools are banning cell phones.
Oh, are they?
Because kids are addicted to them.
Oh, well, there's no doubt. They're created to addict us.
And isn't that then, though, a need to be connected?
Right.
We all have this human need to be connected, but it seems to be a perversion of real human connection.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I think you know, we take what's true, what's real, that we do need to be connected. But it's interesting the way that we try to solve the problem, you know. We create a way that actually alienates us even more because we feel lonelier. We feel less liked. You know, we're Googling to see if someone liked our last post. And we don't even know. And then we have a argument about whether we even want them as our friend. And then we realize we didn't know them anyway. And how'd they get to be? How'd they get to be our friend?
Yeah. I, you know, and I wonder, of course, I'm an old reporter and I'm always following the money. And we live in a capitalist society that values productivity, and anything that is worth having has a dollar value. How much do you see that capitalist idea of productivity affecting our human nature, our anxiety?
That's substantial. It's without question. I'm fascinated by people who do what I do for a living. So, you know, I write books and then give talks about it. But, and then there are people, and then you're in the blogging business too, and, you know, the podcasting business or whatever. And then there are all these people who are trying to get you to make money at it. And they always equate the making the money with the success. In other words, the word success. And when I do talks, I do a quote by a man named David Orr, and he said that the world actually doesn't need more successful people. He said, but it could use more peacemakers.
Oh.
Isn't that good?
I like that.
Peacemakers and poets and lovers of every kind. And so that to me, I mean, that's the paradigm shift. That because the sad thing is the money thing, the reality of the money is we equate that with the word success.
Right.
And that's actually a tragedy to me. Yeah.
Because?
Well, because it disconnects me from my heart, because money is somehow an award that I hold up to show the people around me how important I am. And I have no problem with people making the money, but so much of the good things in my life have no connection to, in fact, almost all the good things in my life have no connection to money at all.
You know, when you talk about that, I think about artists who grow up wanting to make art, whether it's film or visual art or poetry. And then in order to live, they have to be financially successful.
Yes.
And that skews all the art they create.
It's really hard because we, and I don't know, I mean, you probably know more than me. I mean, what are there, 10,000, 11,000 on the island people, but probably half of them are artists of some kind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? And, you know, and the vast majority don't make their primary living doing art. We know that, you know, we the old adage of starving artists. But, you know, we love what we do. And you know, very few people have a bestseller that can... Andrew Wyeth, they just had the Andrew Wyeth show at the Seattle Museum. And his very famous painting of Christina's World, where the woman crawling across the grass toward her house.
Yes.
The very famous photo. Anyway, he painted that. He took several months to paint that, 5 months or more to paint that. It is his most renowned painting. And he sold it to, gave it to the Museum of Modern Art way back in the day, a long time ago. Anyway, he received $1,400 for that. Now, what I love about that is to him, there's no connection with money for that. A painting that's worth millions and millions of dollars now. There's no connection. I love that. I just love that. And it's the same in the movie industry. Those who make great movies realize they have to make a blockbuster first so that the studio can afford to make a movie they really want to make.
That's right. That's right. And even then, it takes millions of dollars.
And even then, it takes a lot of money.
And the fundraising becomes the primary effort.
Well, that's the political world right now. To be a politician, your primary concern is always raising enough money to do something good for people. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that the politicians we now have are in it for doing something good for people. So
okay, now you're in a subject I care about.
Okay. I was going to go to the reason I brought you here today is to help people find a way or ways to survive these tumultuous times where our government appears to not care about us.
Well, it's an interesting thing about it. And the first thing about the government not caring is, first of all, I was going to come to the show last month, but I was sick. I had the flu.
Right.
So, and you're down, and the flu's bad this year, apparently, because a lot of people are. I love the when you go into the doctor, it's a really technical question to ask you. Do you feel like you've been hit by a truck? And you say yes. They say, oh, that's the flu.
Okay, the truck flu.
But there was a period of time there where I had a fever. Anyway, I was down for over a week and didn't watch news. Oh my God, my spirit started to rebound.
Really?
Well, it just the noise, and noise does this just in general in life, and we find this with noise. It you can't hear anything else going on in your head. And the bombardment of the news cycle now, everything's breaking news, and everything is a polar, and everything is like tinged with vitriol. I mean, it is. And so because of that, there's a weight that we have to carry with that we can't just say, whoa, wait a minute. I didn't ask for that. So I give people, the first thing I tell people is, tell me the space where you can go and you feel okay there. You feel safe there. You feel renewed there. You feel replenished there. Tell me what that is. And who's going to help you remember that? That's going back to your thing about that we have to do this together.
Right. What kind of answers do you get when you ask that question?
Well, the first answer I get, interestingly, is, I've never thought about it. You know, my life is hectic. Or the other one is, that'd be great. Wouldn't that be great to have a place like that? I mean, you know, maybe when I'm done raising 17 kids, et cetera, right? But when you have conversations with people, it's interesting. Like walking their dog, or like the first cup of coffee. Or, I mean, there's just a certain thing I do on Sunday when I walk. My driveway is like not quite a half mile, but it's a long way. Mm-hmm. Walk down to get the New York Times Sunday paper. And just the walk, to me, it's a very sacred thing, these moments. You know, and you have to honor these spaces.
Does that have something to do with being outdoors?
Well, there's no doubt about it, because Richard Louv, who's at the University of Washington, talks about, what's he called, with children, that they don't get outdoors enough.
Yes, right.
And it's had a toll. It's taken a toll. There's no doubt about it. Outdoor deficiency, something or whatever. But I think it's actually true. And we know in any of the healthcare industries that if you put somebody in a space or place, even if they can't move, even if physically they can't move, if they have a window and can see outdoors, it adds to their life expectancy. That's just a given.
So when you're suggesting to people that they find a place to pause, what sort of suggestions are you making? It sounds to me like you don't have to construct a studio.
No, you don't. And some people have places, you know, they have their special chair, et cetera. Uh-huh. And that's great. I'm in favor of that. And some people have talismans that they use, you know, people who are religious, you know, hold a rosary or something, or burn a candle, or I don't know, whatever. But the word I like to use is honor. I mean, some of you have a space, but honor it. Honor that space. Honor that time. And rituals are a big deal. It's a profound deal. And parents know this with children, little rituals that are important to them and rituals that we remember. Even moments when you're grateful, I'm grateful for, that's a ritual. And you take time to do that. And so I tell people, because we have those, but we don't honor them. So let's honor the ritual. And going back to your thing about that we need other people to be in this.
Yes.
My best friends know when I'm being strained or when my anxiety is high. Because they'll say to me, dude, you need to get back to your garden. In other words, they know my ritual space. They know that I need to do my little walk in my garden, or there's a special place I sit there. They know that. And so we need each other to remind each other about these rituals, whatever the rituals are. And it doesn't have to be a big deal, but it's a profoundly important deal.
Terry Hershey, I can't thank you enough for being here. We're running out of time.
As we do, yes.
Yes, right. So Terry Hershey is encouraging all of you to take a moment to pause, find your special place, even if it's only that first cup of coffee in the morning. This is Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at 12 noon, and happy to have you join us for lunch. Thanks for listening. I'm Susan McCabe. We'll be back here next Tuesday. I want to thank producers Gail Kellner, Kaya Boding, Bill West, and composer of our theme song, Luke McQuillan. Thanks again for listening.